Welcome to the Black Mass. Have you ever noticed the mannequins in the window of your favorite department store? Here's a story about how they may have gotten there, by John Collier. It's called Evening Primrose.
It's late afternoon in Bracey's department store. And there's Miss Sadie Brodribb just purchasing a pad of High Life Bond for 25 cents. Tonight, when she opens the pad, she'll discover that it's already been used by a Mr. Charles Snell to tell about a series of events which begins with an entry marked March 21st. March 21st. Today, I made my decision. I would turn my back, for good and all, upon the bourgeois world that hates a poet. I would leave, get out, break away. And I have done it. I have done it. I am free. Free as the mote that dances in the sunbeam. Free as a housefly crossing first class in the largest of luxury liners. Free as my verse. Free as the food I shall eat, the paper I write upon, the lamb's wool lined softly slithering slippers I shall wear. This morning I had not so much as a car fare. Ah, now I am here on velvet. You are itching to learn of this haven. You would like to organize trips here, spoil it. Send your relations-in-law. Perhaps even come yourself. After all, this journal will hardly fall into your hands until I am dead. So I'll tell you. I am at Bracey's. Bracey's giant emporium, as happy as a mouse in the middle of an immense cheese. And the world shall know me no more. Merrily, merrily shall I now live. Secure behind a towering pile of carpets, in a corner nook, which I propose to line with eiderdowns, angora vestments, and the Cleopatrian tops in pillows. I shall be cozy. I nipped into this sanctuary late this afternoon, and soon heard the dying footfalls of closing time. From now on, my only effort will be to dodge the night watchman. A poet can dodge. I have already made my first mouse-like exploration. I tiptoed as far as the stationery department, and the timid darted back with only these writing materials. The poet's first need. Now I shall lay them aside and seek other necessities. Food. Wine. The soft furniture of my couch.
a nutty sporting jacket. Ah, this place stimulates me. Dawn, next day. I suppose no one in the world was ever more astonished and overwhelmed than I have been tonight. It is unbelievable. And yet I believe it. I believe it. Ah, how interesting life is when things get like that. I crept out as I said I would and found the great shop in mingled light and gloom. The central well was half illuminated. The circling galleries towered in a pansy serenade of toppling light and shade. The spidery stairways and flying bridges had passed from purpose into fantasy. Silks and velvets glimmered like ghosts. 100 pantycat models offered simpers and embraces to the desert air. Rings, clips, and bracelets glittered frostily in a desolate absence of honey and daddy. Creeping along the transverse aisles, which were in deeper darkness, I felt like a wandering thought in the dreaming brain of a chorus girl down on her luck. Only, of course, their brains are not as big as Gracie's giant emporium. And there was no man there. None, that is, except the night watchman. I had forgotten him. As I crossed an open space on the mezzanine floor, hugging the lee of a display of sultry shawls, I became aware of a regular thudding, which might almost have been that of my own heart. Suddenly it burst upon me that it came from outside me. Yeah, it was footsteps, and they were only a few paces away. Quick as a flash, I seized a flamboyant mantilla, whirled it about me, and stood with one arm outflung, like a carmen petrified in a gesture of disdain. I was successful. He passed me, jingling his little machine on a chain, a new little tune. His eyes stared with reflections of the blaring day. Go, worldling, I whispered, and committed myself a soundless nap. But it froze on my lips. My heart faltered. A new fear seized me. I was afraid to move. I was afraid to look around. I felt I was being watched by something that could see right through me. This was a very different feeling from the ordinary emergency caused by the very ordinary night watchman. My conscious impulse was the obvious one, to glance behind me. But my eyes knew better. Now I remained absolutely petrified, staring straight ahead. My eyes were trying to tell me something that my brain refused to believe. They made their point. I was looking straight into another pair of eyes. Human eyes. But large, flat, luminous. I have seen such eyes among the nocturnal creatures which creep out under the artificial red moonlight in the zoo. The owner was only a dozen feet away from me. The watchman had passed between us, nearer him than me, yet he had not seen him. I must have been looking straight at him for several minutes in a stretch. I had not seen him either. He was half reclining against a low dais, clad in dim but large patterned seven tweeds of the latest cut. Suede shoes, a shirt of a rather broad motif. He was as pale as a creature found under a stone. His long, thin arms ended in hands that hung floatingly, more like trailing transparent fins or wisps of chiffon than ordinary hands. He spoke. His voice was not a voice. It was a mere whistling under the tongue.
Not bad for a beginner.
I grasped that he was complimenting me, and rather satirically, on my own more amateurish feat of camouflage. I'm sorry, I didn't know anyone else lived here.
Oh, yes. We live here. It's delightful.
We?
Yes.
were near the edge of the first gallery. He swept his long hand round, indicating the whole well of the shop. I looked. I saw nothing. I could hear nothing except the watchman's thudding step receding infinitely far along some basement aisle. Don't you see? You know the sensation one has peering into the half-light of a vivarium. One sees dark pebbles that you leave, nothing more. And then, suddenly, a stone breathes. It is a toad. There is a chameleon. Another. A coiled adder, a mantis among the leaves. The whole place seems crepitant with life. Perhaps the whole world is. One glances at one's sleeve, one's feet. So it was with the shop. I looked, and it was empty. I looked, and there was an old lady clamoring out from behind the monstrous clock. There were three girls, elderly and anew, incredibly emaciated, simpering at the entrance of the perfumery. Their hair was a fine floor, pale as gossamer. Equally brittle and colorless was a man with the appearance of a colonel of southern extraction who stood regarding me while he caressed mustachios that would have done credit to a crystal shrimp. A chintzy woman, possibly of literary taste, swam forward from the curtains and drapes. They came thick about me, fluttering, whistling like a waving of gauze in the wind. Their eyes were wide and flatly bright. I saw there was no color to the iris. How raw he looks, the detective. Send for the dark men. I'm not a detective. I'm a poet. I've renounced the world. He is a poet. He has come over to us. Mr. Roscoe found him.
He admires us.
He must meet Mrs. Vanderpant. I was taken to meet Mrs. Vanderpant. She proved to be the grand old lady of the store. Almost entirely transparent. So you are a poet, Mr. Snow. You will find inspiration here. I am quite the oldest inhabitant. Three murders and a complete rebuilding. But they didn't get rid of me.
Tell how you went out by daylight, dear Mrs. Vanderpant, and nearly got bought for Whisper's mother.
That was in pre-war days. I was more robust then. But at the task desk, they suddenly remembered that there was no train. And when they came back to look at me,
he was gone.
Their laughter was like the stridulation of the ghosts of grasshoppers.
Where is Ella? Where is my broth? She's bringing it, Mrs. Vanderpant. It will come.
Tiresome little creature. She is our foundling, Mr. Snow. She is not quite our thought.
Is that so, Mrs. Vanderpant, dear, dear?
I lived alone here, Mr. Snow, for many years. I took refuge here in the terrible times in the 80s. I was a young girl then, and really people were kind enough to say. But poor Papa lost his money. Braces were the mark of a young girl in New York of those days, Mr. Smith. It seemed to me terrible that I should not be able to come here in the ordinary way. So I came here for good. I was quite alarmed when others began to come in after the collapse. It was the dear judge. The colonel. Mrs. Bilby.
I bowed. I was being introduced.
Mrs. Bilby writes plays. And the very old Philadelphia family. You will find us quite nice here, Mr. Snow.
I feel it a great privilege, Mrs. Vanderpant.
And of course, all our dear young people came in 1929. There, poor Papa, jumped from the skyscraper.
I did a lot of bowing. The introductions took a long time. Who would have thought so many people lived at Gracie's?
And here at last is Ella with my broth.
It was then I noticed that the young people were not so young after all. In spite of their smiles, their little ways, their as a new dress, Ella was in her teens, clad only in something from the shop-soiled counter. She nevertheless
had the appearance of a living flower in a French cemetery, or a mermaid among polyps. Come, you stupid thing! Mrs. Vanderpant is waiting. Her pallor was not like theirs, not like the pallor of something that glistens or scuttles when you turn over a stone. Hers was that of a pearl. Ella. Pearl of this remotest, most fantastic cave. Little mermaid, brushed over, pressed down by objects of a deadlier white. Tentacles. I can write no more. March 28th. Well, I'm rapidly becoming used to my new and half-lit world, to my strange company. I'm learning the intricate laws of silence and camouflage which dominate the apparently casual strollings and gatherings of the midnight clan. How they detest the night watchmen, whose existence imposes these laws on their idle festivals. Odious, vulgar creature. He reeks of the poor sun. Actually, he is quite a personable young man, very young for a night watchman. So young that I think he must have been wounded in the war. But they would like to tear him to pieces. They're very pleasant to me, though. They're pleased that a poet should have come among them. Yet I cannot like them entirely. My blood is a little chilled by the uncanny ease with which even the old ladies can clamber spider-like from balcony to balcony. Or is it because they are unkind to Ella? Yesterday we had a bridge party. Tonight, Mrs. Dilby's little play, Love in Shadowland, is going to be presented. Would you believe it? Another colony from Wananakers is coming over en masse to attend. Apparently people live in all the great stores. This visit is considered a great honor, but there is an intense snobbery in these creatures. They speak with horror of a social outcast who left the high-class Madison Avenue establishment and now leads a wallowing, beachcomberous life in a delicatessen. And they relate with tragic emotion the story of a man in Altman who conceived such a passion for a model plaid dressing jacket that he emerged and wrested it from the hands of a purchaser. It seems that all the Altman colony, dreading an investigation, were forced to remove beyond the social pale into a five and dime. Well, I must get ready to attend the play. April 14th. I have found an opportunity to speak to Ella. I dared not before. Here one has a sense always of pale eyes secretly watching. But last night at the play, I developed a fit of hiccups. I was told, somewhat sternly, to go and secrete myself in the basement, among the garbage cans where the watchman never comes. There, in the rat-haunted darkness, I heard a stifled sob. What's that? Is it you, Ella? Oh, what ails you, child? Why do you cry?
They wouldn't even let me see the play.
Oh, is that all? Let me console you.
I'm so unhappy.
She told me her tragic little story. What do you think? When she was a child, a little tiny child of only six, she strayed away and fell asleep behind a counter while her mother tried on a new hat. When she awoke, the store was in darkness.
I cried, and the air came around. He took hold of me.
He will tell if we let her go.
Call in the dark men.
Let her stay here. She will make me a nice little maid.
Who are these dark men, Ella? They spoke of them when I came here.
Don't you know? Oh, it's horrible. It's horrible.
Tell me, Ella. Let us hear it.
You know the morticians called Journey's End, who go to the houses when people die?
Yes, Ella.
Well, in that sack, just like here, and at Bimble's and at Bloomingdale's, there are people living. People like these.
Ah, how disgusting. But what can they live upon, Ella, in a funeral home?
Don't ask me. The dead people are sent there to be embalmed. Oh, they are terrible creatures. Even the people here are terrified of them. But if anyone dies, or if some poor burglar breaks in and steals these people and might tell.
Yes, go on.
Then they send for the others. The dark men.
Good heavens.
Yes. And they put the body in surgical supplies. Or the burglars. All tied up if it's the burglar. And they send for these others. And then they all hide. And then they come. The others. All the pieces of blackness. I saw them once. It was terrible.
And then?
They go in. To where the dead person is, or the poor burglar. And they have wax there. And all sorts of things. And when they're gone, there's just one of these wax models left on the table. And then our people put a dress on it, or a bathing suit, and they mix it up with all the others. And nobody ever knows.
But aren't they heavier than the others, these wax models? You would think they'd be heavier.
No, they're not heavier. I think there's a lot of them gone.
Oh, dear. So they were going to do that to you when you were only a child.
Only Mrs. Vanderpump said I was to be her maid.
I don't like these people, Ella.
Nor do I. I wish I could see a bird.
Why don't you go into the pet shop?
It wouldn't be the same. I want to see it on a twig. It leaves.
Ella, let us meet often. Let us creep away down here and meet. I will tell you about birds and twigs and leaves. May 1st. For the last few nights, the store has been feverish with the shivering whisper of a huge crush at Glidendale. Tonight was the night.
Not changed yet. We leave on the stroke of 2.
Roscoe had appointed himself, or been appointed, my guide. Oh, my God. Roscoe, I am still a greenhorn. I dread the streets.
Oh, nonsense. There's nothing to it. We slip out by 2s and 3s. Stand on the sidewalk. Pick up a taxi. Were you never out late in the old days? If so, you must have seen us many a time.
Good heavens. I believe I have. And often wondered where you came from. And it was from here. But Roscoe, my brow is burning. I find it hard to breathe. I fear I am catching a cold.
Oh. Well. In that case, you must certainly remain behind. Our whole party would be disgraced in the unfortunate event of a sneeze.
I had relied on their rigid etiquette, so largely based on fear of discovery. And I was right. Soon they were gone, drifting out like leaves aslant on the wind. At once I dressed in flannel slacks, 10 bassoons, and a tasteful sport jacket, all new in stock today. I found a quiet spot, safely off the track beaten by the night watchman. There, in a model's lifted hand, I set a wide-burned brand culled from the florist shop, and at once had a young spring tree. The carpet was sandy, sandy as a lakeside beach. A snowy napkin, 2 cakes, each with a cherry on it. I had only to imagine the lake and to find Ella.
I don't, what's this?
I'm a poet, Ella. And when a poet meets a girl like you, he thinks of a day in the country. Do you see this tree? Let us call it our tree. There's the lake, the prettiest lake imaginable. Here is grass and there are flowers. There are birds too, Ella. You told me you like birds.
Oh, Charles, you're so sweet.
I feel I can hear them singing. And here's our luck. But before we eat, go behind the rock there and see what you find.
What rock? Over here? At the pie?
I heard her cry out in the night when she saw the summer dress I had put there for her.
Oh, nice. It's beautiful.
When she came back, the spring day smiled to see her, and the lake shone brighter than before.
Oh, nice.
Ella, let us have lunch. Let us have fun. Let us have a swim. I can just imagine you in one of those new bathing suits.
Sit here, Charles, and talk.
So we sat and talked. And the time was gone like a dream. Oh, we might have stayed there, forgetful of everything. Had it not been for the spider.
Charles, what are you doing?
Nothing, my dear. Just a naughty little spider crawling over your knee. Purely imaginary, of course. But that thought was sometimes the worst. I had to try to catch him.
Don't, Charles. It's late. It's terribly late. I'll be back in a minute. I'd better go home.
I took her home to the kitchenware on the sub-ground floor and kissed her good day. She offered me her cheek. This troubled me. May 10th. Ella, I love you. I said it to her just like that. And we have met many times. I've dreamt of a bad day. I've not even kept up my journal. Mirth has been out of the question. Ella, I love you. Let us move into the trousseau department. Don't look so dismayed, darling. If you like, we will go right away from here. We will live in that little restaurant in Central Park. There are thousands of birds there.
Please don't talk like that.
But I love you with all my heart.
Nothing.
But I find I must. I can't help it. Ella, you don't love another.
Oh, God. I do.
Love another? Ella? One of these? I thought you dreaded them all. It must be Roscoe. He's the only one that's in any way human. We talk of art, life, and such things, and he has stolen your heart.
No, Charles, no. You picked out the rest, really. I hate them all. They make me shudder.
Who is it, then?
It's him.
Who?
The Night Watchman.
Impossible.
No. It's my gifted son.
Oh, Ella. You have broken my heart.
Be my friend, though.
Yeah, I will. I'll be your brother. How did you fall in love with him?
Oh, Charles, it was so wonderful. I was thinking of birds. And I was careless. Don't tell him that, Charles, they'll punish me.
No, no, go on.
I was careless. And there he was, coming round the corner. And there was no place for me to hide. I had this blue dress on. There were only some wax models in the underpins.
Please go on.
I couldn't help it. I slipped off my dress and stood still.
I see.
And he stopped just by me, Charles. And he looked at me. And he touched my cheek.
Did he notice nothing?
No, it was cold. But Charles, he said, "Sir Hannah, I was so made in love you on 8th Avenue." Charles, wasn't that a lovely thing to say?
Personally, I should have said Park Avenue.
Oh, Charles, don't get like these people here. Sometimes I think you're getting like them. That is not enough, Charles. It was a lovely thing to say.
Yes, yes, but my heart's broken. And what can you do about him, Ella? He belongs to another world.
Yes, Charles. 8th Avenue. I want to go there. Charles, are you truly my friend?
I am your brother. Only my heart's broken.
I tell you, I will. I'm going to stand there again. So you'll see me.
And then?
Perhaps he'll speak to me again.
Ah, my dearest Ella, you are torturing yourself. You're making it worse.
No, darling. Because I shall answer him. He will take me away.
Ella, I can't bear it.
There's someone coming. I shall see birds. New birds sound. And flowers growing. They're coming. Let's go.
May 13th. The last 3 days have been torture. This evening I ate broke. Roscoe had joined me. He sat eyeing me for a long time. He put his hand on my shoulder. Ah, you're looking seedy, old fellow. Why don't you go over to Wanamaker's for some speeding? It's deeper than that, Roscoe. Ah, I'm done for. I can't eat. I can't sleep. I can't write. Man, I can't even write. Oh, what is it? Day starvation? Roscoe, it's love. Not one of the staff cows or the customers. That's absolutely forbidden. No, it's not that, Roscoe, but just as hopeless. Oh, my dear old fellow. I can't bear to see you like this. Let me help you. Let me share your trouble. Ah, then it all came out. It burst out. I trusted him. I think I trusted him. I really think I have no intention of betraying her, of spoiling her escape, of keeping her here till her heart turned toward me. If I had, it was subconscious. I swear it. But I told him all. He was sympathetic, but I detected a sly reserve in his sympathy. Do we respect my confidence, Roscoe? This has to be a secret between us. A secret is the grave, old chap. And he must have gone straight to Mrs. Vanderpant. This evening, the atmosphere has changed. People flicker to and fro, smiling nervously, horribly. With a sort of frightened, sadistic exultation. When I speak to any of them, they answer evasively, fidget and disappear. An informal dance has been called off. I can't find Ella anywhere. I will creep out. I will look for her again. Later. Heaven, it has happened. I went in desperation to the manager's office, whose glass front overlooks the whole shop. I watched till midnight. Then I saw a little group of them, like ants, bearing a victim. They were carrying Ella. They took her to the surgical department. They took other things. And coming back here, I was passed by a flickering, whispering horde of them, glancing over their shoulders in a thrilled ecstasy of panic, making for their hiding places. I, too, hid myself. How can I describe the dark, inhuman creatures that passed me, silent in shadow? They went there. The dark men. Where Ella is. What can I do? There is only one thing. I will find the watchman. I will tell him. He and I will have her. And if we are overpowered, I will leave this on a counter tomorrow. If we live, I can recover it. If not, look in the windows. Look for 3 new figures. 2 men. 1 rather sensitive looking. And a girl. She has blue eyes. Like periwinkle flowers. And her upper lip is lifted a little. Look for us. Smoke them out. Obliterate them. Avenge us. That was Evening Primrose by John Collier. The part of Ella is played by Jan Dawson,
and the rest of the cast was impersonated by your host of The Black Mass, Eric Bauerfeld. The technical production was by Fred Seiden. And now, good night.